Welcome to Season 2 of The Blunderbuss, where we go on a journey into leadership failure. My name is Edward Vaughan. Join me as I travel far and wide on my special bus, The Blunderbuss, and have honest conversations with great leaders about some of their greatest leadership disasters. On The Blunderbuss, we think it's possible to learn much more from your moments of failure than your moments of success, if you know the magic secret. And we also know that failure can be fun, especially other people's. Today, I've driven The Blunderbuss to Darling Point, in Sydney's eastern suburbs. I'm speaking to the Reverend Dr. Michael Jensen, theologian, pastor, author, and guru of Christian podcasting. Welcome onto the bus, Michael.
Well, thanks for having me, Ed. It's great to be here.
Hey, you're a pretty bright lad. Have you ever made any leadership mistakes?
Dumb mistakes. And mistakes are, I suppose, that I could have been told about it, probably was told about, but then you couldn't, on one level, it was very hard to foresee them until you've actually made them. And I guess I would sum that up by I employed people to work with me in ministry. I employed people I really liked and who had great talents and gifts, and then I didn't really pay enough attention to them. I didn't set them up for success.
Yeah, wow.
So okay. I kind of went the, what do you call that, that kind of gardening where you just kind of throw the seeds out and you hope they sprout?
The broadcast and
it's not hydroponic. Yeah, is it sort of, I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
it's,
just chuck out the seed.
Permaculture. So
The permaculture approach
to staff. And it's really an old world model that in the past, Anglican ministers used to sit in their studies and their assistant would sit in his study, usually him. And then they'd have a staff meeting, and probably prayer meeting each week, and then they wouldn't necessarily see each other from week to week.
Yes.
And the point of being an assistant was to make sure your boss never got annoyed with you.
Yes.
And the point of being a boss was to make sure that your assistant just did what they were told and didn't really make much of a fuss.
And they were going to be your assistant for 2, maybe 3 years and then move on.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is not a long-term development of a team or anything like that.
No, nothing like that. And I knew technically that wasn't what I wanted and that wasn't the kind of relationship that or the team that I was building. But I gave – and I wanted to give people space. So I had two particular team members who I think I gave a lot of space to. One was very young and she'd come on new. She was getting married. And so I gave her a lot of space, especially in the first 6 months or so. And then it was then that she came to me and said, I'm actually depressed and I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I should be doing. I have days that go by. I'm not really sure why I'm here. There's no office culture, and so I'm bored, and I'm desperately lonely. I thought, oh wow. And actually, she said there were some very significant things that she said there. One is that people love working in teams. They love team culture, and they love working together. And working together is fun, motivating, exciting, and also you want to learn from the person who's employed you, and also you can give quick feedback, because if you're only meeting every so, this is really I'm conflict averse, right? And I think a lot of pastors are. You know, we don't go into the pastor. I mean, actually, maybe some people do go into the pastor because they like conflict, but I'm conflict averse. And so for me, if I want to correct someone who's on my staff team, it builds up and builds up and builds up. I'll let it go and I'll hope it'll just work itself out.
Yes.
But if we're seeing each other all the time, I can go, oh, I'd prefer if you didn't do that.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And it can be in the context of a lot of banter. And
the warning on the run, as it were.
And it's no emotion.
Yeah.
It's good. It's done.
Yeah.
But if you just have to wait, then it becomes a meeting. A big deal. You're coming to the headmaster's office. It's a bit like that.
Yeah.
And it becomes a matter of conflict and tears and all of that, and then it strains the relationship. So I didn't set the team up to succeed. I also didn't make sure that the paying conditions were set and clear, because, again, there's an old culture where you didn't have a contract, you didn't have a piece of paper, a job description. You just went and did ministry, whatever ministry was. I, in fact, the couple of jobs I've had, I hardly had a job description at all.
Yes, yes.
And I certainly didn't have a contract when I was working at more colleges, as far as I could I remember.
No, and you probably don't have a job description now, is
that correct? Very, very brief one. And I like it that way, actually, because that gives you a lot of freedom.
Right.
But actually, people like clarity.
Yeah, yeah.
And in particular, they like clarity about their pay and conditions. And I did not look over, and there were a couple of really bad things that happened to do with late pay and mistaken pay and just not clarity about who was being paid what.
Yes.
And that caused a lot of tension. So
in the system, Michael, you and I are both Anglican. There are meant to be people who look after this and structures to look after this kind of stuff. And yet you felt as though you needed to attend to this?
Well, it's Maybe I suppose I feel like the buck stops with me, even though it is the what we call the wardens. It is the warden's responsibility. But also, I'm very keenly aware that often wardens are they're amateurs and they're busy.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy that they turn up to meetings and they give good support. But I'm also conscious that it's often beyond their pay grade as well.
Because they're not employers in the normal sense of the word in church, you know.
No, but it's an increasingly legislative, legal sort of environment we're in. So people want to know, they want a contract, and they want clarity about what their pay and conditions are, and they're not happy with the sort of flexibility of a previous generation.
No. So how did you miss this? You said you didn't really attend to what I'd describe maybe as staff culture, and maybe you didn't attend to some of these kind of hygiene issues of, you know, pay and job description and stuff like that. How did you miss it?
Well, I missed it because I just thought I'm likable. Everyone likes me. Everyone likes getting on with me. We're going to have fun together and I like these people.
Yeah, right.
So I just assumed it would kind of happen organically.
Right, yeah.
And also it would have taken more sacrifice from me to make sure we had office hours.
Right.
Because I'd have a nice place to work, right?
Yeah.
So I've got a nice office here and I study in my home.
Yeah.
And so I needed to actually say, no, we're all going to work together.
Yes.
In place, in this place, and I'm gonna have set hours where I help someone with their work, and it took me a while to realize also that one of the things that people really like at work, one of the love languages, if you like, in the workplace is helping with their work.
Yes,
and so being able to sit down with a person who's you're employing and saying, how can I help you now? That gives them a real boost.
Yeah.
An hour of your time and you're focused.
Yeah. People really value that.
It's massively important to people.
So I'm guessing that you didn't see this incredibly well modeled previously in your other roles.
I worked in as an academic, and so we were basically sort of sole traders who sort of came in contractors. It felt like we were contractors. We kept apart as much as possible, and we want to just be do our own thing. And the classroom is what we it's our domain.
Mm-hmm.
And so team meetings are a pain in the neck. Essentially, right. It wasn't a team culture. Although I've enjoyed teams in the past, I've really enjoyed being in teams. Mm. I remember some teams I was in at school that were well led and you had great you had functions and the buzz of being in a team was something.
But there's something about the ability to create the team, develop the culture, do all those sorts of things that maybe you hadn't picked up, you hadn't seen modelled.
Well, I didn't know that you could do it. I thought it just happened through your kind of...
Your charm.
Through my charm. Seriously. I thought, oh, well, you know, people get on with me. I'll get on with people.
Yeah.
I'm not an angry person. But you actually need to be deliberate.
Yeah.
And also a bit of boundaries. Some boundaries are good. You know, actually, you need to be here and you need to be here on time.
People do actually like structure.
Turns out they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there a moment when you realised that you've made this mistake?
Oh, gosh.
I think the answer is yes.
Well, a series of moments, yeah. I guess when one of the people walked out, just basically there was an actual meeting where they said, I resign, I'm out of here.
Wow.
So it wasn't a slow burn,
no.
And at one level, it was a dramatic. It was actually in a cafe too, so it was all in public, and they were very unhappy. Obviously, I was quite relieved, but at the same time. That had gone. I needed to go back and look at my role in that.
Yes.
And then a second employee, likewise, there were things going on in his personal life that I just didn't see. Yes. I didn't see. And when everything came unstuck, I wondered why I'd been blind to that. Mm. I'd had some intuitions, but I'd never followed through on them or asked him serious questions or really given him the space in which he could be honest and open. Mm. And I obviously, and when he came dramatically unstuck, that was all very obvious. And again, I don't think I'm entirely to blame for everything in either case, but I had to reflect, you know, what have I contributed?
Yes.
I love family systems theory. Mm. And I was trying to think, what was it that, what was my role in that? And I can, that was, yeah, I could see neglect was the role, I think.
Yes.
Was my role in that, my contribution.
Final question. What have you learned about failure?
Oh, failure. Well, I think it's important not to say I'm crap at that. I'm just crap at that. Because that's my temptation is to go, well, I'm a terrible team leader.
Yeah, right.
Because actually, you know, and I love to read books about, you know, football managers and what have you, and find out, you know, yeah, they were terrible too once. So you can actually, there are actually skills. It's not just natural ability. There's skills that can be learnt. And I'm determined not to be as far as I'm given further chances. That failure can be, it should not be just a matter of saying, well, that's not my gifting. I think you, particularly in the areas of responsibility and leadership, you need to take responsibility and learn and grow.
Thanks to Michael Jensen for sharing about one of his leadership mistakes and what he's learned. At the St. Michael's Institute, we want to encourage people to take more risks for the kingdom of God and have a crack at innovative ministries, which means that sometimes we're going to get things wrong. We'd love it if you would subscribe and rate the Blunderbus. It actually helps more people know about us. Go to our website at www.stmichaels.institute. And thanks, Michael, for being with us today.
Thanks, Dave.